Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Giants Find Carlos Correa Coroncast. I'm Brian Murphy.
I'm Doug Brizzoni, and Brian, shut up. Don't, whatever you're going to say, don't say it. We are going to talk about the Giants signing Carlos Correa to a 13-year, $350 million deal.
Woo! Hooting and hollering. Yeah!
Woo-hoo-hoo! We're hitting both buttons.
That's right. It was Carlos Correa, a guy that you had at the top of your list, if not Judge, then Correa. Was that sort of your thinking or what?
Yeah, I mean, they were clearly the top two hitters this year. I mean, you know, Trey Turner, excellent player. Who's the other shortstop who's already signed? Bogaerts, good player. But
Dansby Swanson. You
know, Dansby Swanson, also good. But Correa is the one. Correa and Judge were the two who you're like, those are the two who are most likely to be great players for several years to come.
I kind of forgot about Correa in the background, like coming into the offseason. I think I definitely let my biases against Astros and also just this idea of I thought of him as a nice player and not in a, like a damning with faint praise. I'm like, yeah, he's good. Is he going to be like a $30 million, $40 million a year player, which he might be pitched to the market as? I didn't think so, but you know what? He's not a $30 or $40 million a year player because the Giants spread it out over 13. But he is not just a nice player. He's a pretty freaking great player. I think the injuries, all that stuff have made me had some concerns, but so that's why he just wasn't on my, it was like after Judge, I don't know what they're going to do. But there is a part of me that's like, the Giants are going to be fine basically no matter what they do. And we'll get into that in a little bit later. But yes, we're talking largely about Carlos Correa. I did carve out some time for us to talk about Correa as part of a catalog of moves that the Giants have made this year. And we'll talk about that some more. But I want to say this. Are there any stats you want to highlight? Any sort of things about him that you're like, listen, if you don't know who Carlos Correa is, look at this.
Look at this. So last year, his defense, I want to talk about his defense a little. Last year, it regressed a bit, which, you know, defense is always up and down a bit. The year before, It was fantastic. I think he won the Platinum Glove as the best fielder in the majors the year before. If not then it was 2018. I'm not sure. I don't actually remember which year. Those are his two best defensive years. Like he's
plus really 15 runs. Yeah. He was plus 15 Fangraphs runs in 21.
Yeah. And in 22 was a down year. He's still plus two runs. You know, that's not bad. I mean, as much as we love Brandon Crawford, who has had some excellent years defensively, you know, his best year was set plus 17 runs, and that was, and Correa's best year is also plus 17 runs. So they have similar ceilings, but Correa's a lot younger. And so as Crawford ages and leaves after next year, it's going to be great to have a legitimate star there at shortstop.
Yeah, I just doing the averages, Crawford's obviously had a longer career, but Brandon Crawford's, I think his defensive runs, just this is Fangraph, so it's in a way it's kind of quick and dirty. We're not factoring in like outs above average and zone rating, and we're kind of ignoring, I'm ignoring just the last 3 years, which generally speaking, when you're doing an analysis of a player, that's usually the better way to go, not the whole career. But just to give you an idea of what you're dealing with, if you as a Giants fan consider Brandon Crawford to be one of the best defensive shortstops you've ever seen, which when you're talking about all of baseball is maybe debatable, but let's just say it's not, it's debatable in that there's an argument to be made. Brandon Crawford is an elite defender at shortstop. Great. He's basically twice as good as Carlos Correa, who is great. Right. If that makes sense, that's what the number is, just a quick and dirty analysis over their career. And then offensively, it's not even a question. So you've got a guy who's a good defender, but half as good as Brandon Crawford, let's say, but he is, I don't know what's a way to say this that makes the most sense. And actually you're better at numbers than I am, but he's four times better offensively. Or actually I have that wrong. Because Brandon Crawford has this negative run value, offense value, just if you're going off the stand, but he's easily twice as good. So half the defender, twice as good on offense. That's a good line.
So Crawford has been in the majors for 12 years. Carlos Correa's worst offensive year would have been a middle of the pack one for Crawford.
That's right. And there's a lot more to talk about with him that I want to, but I also want to transition. I want to cover the bases because we just did a podcast. We just talked about this.
Just because we got it completely wrong doesn't mean we can't talk about it more.
There's a non-zero chance Larry Bear was locked in a broom closet for these negotiations to be closed out. We could still be right, Doug.
I mean, they might have listened to the podcast and been like, oh, if we're going to close this thing out, hey, Larry, go talk to Dansby Swanson.
That's right. There is one thing we haven't tried yet, this one simple trick. So he is Carlos Correa is unequivocally a good player, even if you want to factor in that he admitted to cheating and all that stuff, which is fine. That's all fair to count against him, but he is objectively, statistically a great player. He also is a player with very little experience at Oracle Park, which may have helped the Giants. I got to read this Henry Schulman tweet. This is what he sent last night. My expansive research team has learned that Correa has played in 5 games at Oracle Park. 3 were during the day, and the average first pitch temperature of the 5 was 66 degrees. 1 a day game at 73 degrees. Shh, don't say anything else till he signs the contract. So that was the Giants found the market inefficiency.
So, Brian, I did some research on this. Do you know how he did against the Giants in those games? Okay, if you had to guess, good, okay, or bad, which one of those is closest?
Good.
Completely wrong. He was awful in those 5 games.
He was awful. Okay.
He hit 158, 238, 211.
Okay. Then he must have just had a great series against them when he was with the Twins. Or is it just one good game? He might have just had one
that's
good
his
game.
Career. That's his career. That's his career at Oracle Park.
Okay.
All 5 games.
Okay. Well, then great. He's like 5 game. Carlos Correa said 5 games is not a big enough sample size.
That's right. A clip went around on Twitter where he was talking about analytics. I didn't watch it, but let's just say that was one of them.
That's right. There was a clip also of Jeremy Reed, who's the shortstop, I would say a burgeoning star, or he's a really good, he's a nice player. Yeah.
Jeremy
Pena? Nice playoffs. Jeremy Pena. I said Reed, didn't I? Jeremy Pena, the shortstop for the Astros currently. And there is a clip going around of him talking about what Carlos Correa taking him under his wing in that final season that he was with the Astros. And very complimentary, very inspired, kind of in awe of what Correa did. And Correa was, after they got eliminated in the World Series, said, you know, this is, you're going to be a star now, or this is your team now, or you're going to have a lot more responsibility. He knew he was leaving. All the pundits today were pointing out something as well. At the end of that year, so what was that, 2021? So he was offered by the Astros a 5-year, $160 million deal. And then I don't recall off the top of my head what he got from Minnesota this past season in 22. But that plus now the next 13 years, he turned 5 years, 160 into 14 years, 395 million dollars. I think that was maybe what winds up being,
something like that.
So something wild. Good for him. Congratulations.
That's the way to do it. Yeah.
All right. So what does this mean? You know, we're commenting as fans, and you know, that's what SB Nation's all about. That's what the platform is. But we're also trying to come at it from a sort of informed view in terms of, like, you guys who are listening, you people who are listening, you have your own lives. You're doing your own thing. You're not checking in all day. But Doug and I, God, there are very few minutes in the day where I'm not thinking about the Giants. I won't speak for you, Doug, but.
No, we do not have lives. You have lives. We don't. Yes. It has been a series of very poor choices on our parts that have led us here.
So not only are we, like, thinking about them, we're reading about them. We're finding errant comments. I will even use Twitter sometimes as a primary source because I'm like, who is saying this? And following like a tree of this person worked for this person, or this person's this informed. They have these relationships. But all that said, I am not entirely sure what it means for Brandon Crawford, let's say. I will say that Keith Law's analysis of the deal, where, like, oh, they'll just cut or bench Brandon Crawford so that Correa can play short, is one of those things. You know, Keith Law feels like his prime is past, but it's one of those things where it's like he's certainly been accused of being sort of out of touch, if not with his audience. Then I think this is one of those times where he's just out of touch with, like, what's going on in baseball, and using his own personal, like, well, of course you wouldn't play a bad player, to completely ignore Brandon Crawford's place on the Giants in the franchise history. So the question of, is he moving to third base? Is he playing shortstop? Is an interesting one. He said in September, right, to John Shea, that he intends to play shortstop next year in the final year of his deal. We've certainly heard a lot of talk that, but I've also heard just as much just talk, not from Crawford, that he'll just move to third base. And I wonder if you're Carlos Correa and you're signing a 13-year deal, that it doesn't matter.
Right. He's going to be, Correa is eventually going to be shortstop.
Right.
You know, no matter what. So Susan Slusser did say Crawford will move to third on Twitter.
Yeah, it's just Slusser says a lot of things. Let's. We don't want to get slussed. We don't want to walk under the slussing floor and fall through the slusser. But I don't know. Yeah, it's a good point. But also, realistically, you know, if something came up and they're like, no, we feel like they'll see Crawford play third base in spring training or something, you know, is there a reasonable expectation that Brandon Crawford's going to play 100 games this year anyway? He played 118 last year. You know, so I guess what I'm saying is, like, is this really that big of a deal, or is it just weird to think about? I think it's more weird to think about than an actual issue.
Yeah, I think it's weird to think about. I mean, when I've seen people talk about it, and one of the things they point out is, you know, Cal Ripken moved to third. Like, he was a shortstop who moved to third. You don't get, like, more of a franchise player than that. And so it can happen, you know. And Crawford, I mean, you know, Crawford was a good shortstop last year.
He was better than Correa defensively.
He was better than Correa, but he's also going to be 36. And as someone who is recently 36 and is now sadly older than 36, I can tell you, your body, even Brandon Crawford's body, will probably not play its best shortstop at that age. So, you know, last year, sure, Crawford was better. Next year, will he be? I don't know. And if Correa is going to be sort of the franchise guy, then that's, you know, it would make sense to put him there. Also, if somebody gets injured or is out for game, it will be nice to not have to rely on Tyro Estrada there. I love you, Tyro, yes. But, you know, that's more of an, that should be more of an emergency option than a backup option.
Right. It's definitely, it's, I think it's weird for Giants fans to think this line and have it have any sort of real weight to it. But really, this is a good problem to have. Yeah, that 100%. You have your choices. So
you want the contract to have either a great shortstop or the best player on your team at shortstop. Like that's a good thing.
Yes. So the contract itself, this is more of a me question. I think we'll be able to move on from it quickly, but why are these deals so long? Why is that needed in the current climate? I think the answer is pretty clear, right? It's just they don't want to run up against the luxury tax. Any of these owners, they want to lower the burden of it if they do run into it, the Phillies being an example, the Yankees too. But at the same time, these players are not just in a vacuum. They have elders in their lives, and surely their fathers or mothers being like, why do you want to play baseball at 40? Why do you want to be doing that with your life? Like, you're going to be tired of it at some point, if not just not good at it. You know, they can read the same tables of that. And I guess, what does that mean? I mean, that would prevent these gigantic deals from being signed. But at the same time, that's the baller move, right? If you're Carlos Correa, 7 years sounds great, but what if you could get the same money for 5? You know, that kind of stuff. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or because now I'm sure, since you said you're past 36, aren't you like, man, if I had been playing baseball since I was like competitively, where it was super serious since I was like 12 years old, that's I had the chance to.
The teams I would have been on would have been very unhappy if I had been playing competitively. They're like, why is this guy still here? He's bad at everything. Yeah, I mean,
he's got a good spirit, though. You've got good jokes.
He's got a good spirit. His arm is okay. If he throws the ball in from the outfield, it'll get to the infield on the fly. That's the kindest thing you can say about me as a baseball player. That's also true.
Really sarcastic, no, I mean, when he's rounding the bases. Yeah, good stuff.
So I think there's a couple things. I think from the team's perspective, it's the luxury tax thing. From a player's perspective, though, you're not going to get much more than the $350 million total. And since that's going to take you through all of your good years anyway, I mean, like, realistically speaking, you know, maybe they negotiate super hard and they get it down to $350 million for 9 years, right? Or something, or like $300 million for 9 years. Is he going to make that extra $50 million over those last 4 years? No, he's not, because he's going to be worse at baseball, because that's what happens. So what you're, from the player's perspective, you're getting a team that's saying, yes, you're good enough. We think you're worth this. And that's what you want to hear. You want a team that believes in you like that. So it does kind of make sense for both sides. And if you're going to, there's only so many players who get more than one mega deal. And generally speaking, A-Rod and Stanton are the only ones I can think of offhand. Their second mega deal came because they opted out after like 3 or 4 years of the first one. You don't actually get another massive deal like that. You only get one. So you might as well just have it take the rest of your career and get as much as you can out of it.
I agree. I just am also thinking in more about the case of Judge. I was thinking is like that he's seeing the same numbers, if not better numbers, than we can see about people his size and all that. And it makes complete sense to bet on yourself. But I'm also curious, like, was there a version where he could do 8 for 3? You know what I mean? Like, when people think 8 years, you know, Carlos Correa is in 13 years is going to be 41. But isn't that just him? He's playing through his age 30 season. It's like people forget to count the first season of the deal that starts. I guess in the case of Correa, So what, a 13-year deal and 40, a 10-year deal, he would have been ending age 37 season, right? So, and if it was 10 for 350, the Giants are spending it's a $35 million a year AAV. Right now it's about $27 million. And I get it. They're definitely saying we can do a lot with that $8 million, including pay down some of the tax that we would owe or whatever, if we wanted to go with Ohtani right. or something. But I guess that's what I'm saying. The part about exactly what you said, they're going to get paid essentially what their value is if things go well, or if they continue producing at a relative rate for the next. Really, these long-term deals, these are really intended to be the value, what the teams believe are your next 6 years, right? That makes the most sense to me. They're assuming that they're going to get Pete Correa for the next 3 years, and then probably the next three after that, probably some range of good to even very good. And then whatever they get after that, they're going to just count as good fortune. And I don't have a problem with it.
Like offhand, if you think about Hunter Pence's 5-year deal, the first 2 years he was peak Pence. The next 2 years he was mostly like good when he was on the field, but injured. So like he maybe played a combined 130 games between those 2 years, 130 good games, but still, you know, 130 games. Then his last year, he was awful. So like, if you stretch that out a little bit longer, that's about the shape you would expect it to take. Even if, you know, hopefully it'll be 3 or 4 good years and then like 3 okay years and then the rest of it or whatever.
I just don't, I mean, in the case of Judge, let's just stick with Judge for a second, since this is why I was thinking about it. And you get booed at Yankee Stadium in the first month of the season this past season. You know, the last 3 years of your career are going to be your home fans, you know, reacting negatively to you, or your injury always being the topic of conversation, and basically constant reminders of your mortality or that you're past your glory days. And I just wonder if there wasn't one person at any point where Carlos Correa's like uncle or dad or mom were like, why do you want that garbage? Why do you want that nonsense clouding up your life? But if that's the deal, and yeah, getting the most money is what matters at the end of the day. And I guess if they're saying whatever form that takes, I'm fine with it. That all tracks. But I do wonder if there are players that have been like, I don't want to play past 38. But I want this amount of money, so how do we make this work? I mean, I read that Baggerly said this in his report, that the Giants were trying to get it to go to 15 years to spread the money out that much more. And that would have just run afoul of Major League Baseball. The commissioner would have nixed the deal. No indication that the player would have had an issue with that, which maybe they would have, but who knows? I
think there was a report that the Padres offered or wanted to sign Judge for 14 years, $400 million, and the league said, no, you can't do that. So it would have been the same thing.
So this kind of, in our next topic point, it kind of crams into that a little bit. Just that's why you're seeing all these long deals and all that, and why they're stretching them out. But the value, look at the total value. That's how they're valuing the player. And I didn't leave us a room for doing this, because maybe it attaches later to the other moves they've made. But essentially, this Carlos Correa deal, and this is what I said last night on Twitter, was this is the perfect condition. It's the perfect situation that the Giants front office wants to be in. He is the perfect player for what they are trying to do, not just from a talent standpoint, but how they acquire and manage that talent, how they pay for it. He costs no draft pick, no international bonus pool money, right? He fills a position of need, 28 years old. So basically at his peak value right now, and you're going to write out the rest of that. And has been so consistently better than your other options that it's just a money upgrade. You're literally just paying money for an upgrade, which is the point of the money, is to improve upon some area of your roster. You know, Marco Luciano is... That's what the money's for. Yes, Marco Luciano is not projected to stay at shortstop, right? You've got Casey Schmidt's going to be third base. You know, so again, if something weird happens in a shortstop, is it Averson Arteaga? Am I making up a name?
Averson Arteaga.
Yeah,
Averson Arteaga. That's right.
Yeah, if he just, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, we got to figure out what to do with him. That's, again, a good problem to have. But in the meantime, you're filling a crucial position of need who also checks the marquee box, you know, just a clubhouse thing. I'm a big believer in that. And that Jeremy Pena comment was more evidence that, okay, there's enough around the industry to indicate that they think of him not just as a good guy, but as a leader, a guy who wants to be in the front, the forefront of things. And that's, the Giants have, the Farhan Zaidi era has been very aggressive about saying, we want good people, people who love playing baseball, people are, you know, here to learn and also take charge and be a leader. And he checks literally every box from the whole time Zaidi and Kapler had their press conference, all their interviews, ups and down years, whatever. He checks every single box. So the amount that they're paying for him is nothing, because it is exactly what they would have hoped to do in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, so this was the, I think I might've said this a few days ago on the last podcast. This was the plan. This is what they wanted to do. This is what the Dodgers did. And Zaidi was not there when they hit their culmination of that plan with Mookie Betts. But you want to build like a strong foundation, and then you get that star and you go to the next level. That's what they want to do. And they're not, I mean, their foundation isn't quite there yet. Like, they're not quite as rock solid, just producing 3-win players out of their farm system by accident. But like, oh yeah, Zaidi's not going, oh yeah, I hadn't heard of that guy either like last week, but yeah, he's now the fourth best player on the team. They're not quite doing that. But they all, but you know, if you can get that star player, you get him. Like that's what you do. I would think another point I would make is that, and I was going to say this before I read Dan Szymborski's Zips projections where he said what the Twins actually offered Correa, but the Minnesota Twins were never going to outbid the Giants for Carlos Correa. That was absolutely not going to happen. I was not worried about them. I was worried about like the Mets or some other like big market team coming in and just making a silly deal, or like the Padres being like, no, we also want him. We don't care. We don't care. We just got one. We're going to get two.
Yeah, like, that was my flash out. Yes. I was like, are the Red Sox going to say, psych, we were negging Xander Bogaerts this whole time so we could get Carlos Correa?
Yeah. That was always way more likely to me than the Twins. And the Twins offered 10 years, $285 million, apparently. Which, you
competitive.
Know,
yeah.
That's a good offer last year. It's not what guys are making this year. It's less than correct. What Xander Bogaerts. I mean, it's a little bit more money over one fewer year, but realistically, it's not as good as the Bogaerts deal, you know, for the player, the caliber of players that they are. You have to do more than that.
I should have then just mentioned, okay, if the Twins had somehow just said 10-350 or 13-350, that's when it comes down to, why would Carlos Correa take the one where he's playing more for the same money? That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's just getting old and be like, why do you want to work so much? So long. You can get paid the same. Why not? Yeah, that's Dan Szymborski's, yes, write up. What, he's been on the show before. It was a great piece. He's a great writer anyway, but it was a really good piece of talking about it all. And yeah, exactly. The Twins were dealing with the last free agency model of how you approach players. And the Giants didn't have to have that consideration because it was just money. On top of that, he projected it to be a 41.7 win value over 13 years, which, who knows, right? 13 years out as a baseball player projection, who knows what that is. But that would basically mean that what they offered him would be in line with the projection, depending on how you value wins above replacement. You said it's $8 million, then it's about $333 million would be the value of 41.7 wins, but we know it goes a little bit beyond wins above replacement, the intangibles, but it's all an exact science. But man, the Giants are working really hard to make it exact. Oh, I forgot my other point. What you said about the Dodgers and how he left before that could, like, when that all really started happening. The Giants also didn't have to trade prospect capital or take on bad salary from somewhere else like the Dodgers had done before. So for the Giants, this was just like, we just have to outlay cash for one player. There's no other players involved. We're not taking on extra money. It's just this one guy. And they're getting him for $27 million a year. That's a bargain.
Yeah, really. I mean, the Dodgers had to do it twice. Because, you know, people remember the Betts and David Price contracts coming together. But also, when the Dodgers traded for Adrian Gonzalez, they had to take Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett. Like, the Dodgers were desperate to get those guys. You know, Adrian Gonzalez was a good player for them, but not his days of, like, being a big star were mostly over. But, you know, Betts, obviously, it's worked out. The Giants are just paying money. And you know what? They have lots of money, and they can pay it, and they should pay it.
That's right.
And also, Carlos Baerga, half right. Wrong on Judge, right on the Giants getting Correa.
He was more than half right because he knew what the Giants' offer was to them. And all Baerga was missing was the lack of imagination. He couldn't imagine that Hal Steinbrenner would match the deal. So I think he was more than half right. I think he knew what the offer was. And he's like, well, of course, Judge is going to take that. And then the Yankees just kind of put their belt on and went, fine. Like, they put their pants on and they're like, fine.
And that's how Steinbrenner came back from his meeting with the Pope. He was like, okay, we're
doing this. The Pope turned down my bribe, so I'm definitely going to hell, which means I have the money to get Aaron Judge. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Let's dabble in. Let's do some basic bitch sports blog broadcasting right now. Let's do some predictions, Doug.
Okay, I love predictions.
Do you think Larry Bear was barred from the negotiation?
they didn't tell him he was barred. They told him, you know, we're not sure we're going to get this done. You better go reach out to Dansby Swanson. I think I've already said that. He got on a plane, went to wherever Swanson lives. They had a perfectly cordial meeting, walked away from it. Swanson was like, this is kind of a weird guy. And then the Giants signed Correa.
I like that. That's much more complicated and fun. And I would think it would just be like, oh, the meeting's in conference room B, and then it's actually in conference room C. And then
No, they've tried that one on Larry Bear before. He's a wily character.
Well, of course it'd be in conference room B for Bear.
So, yeah, exactly.
Where else would it be?
He's like, oh, they must have just said the wrong conference. I'm like, oh, we didn't think he'd check the other ones.
I'm convinced he was not barred from the negotiation, but it was less that it was Rob Dean. That's who Scott Boras was dealing with. Because like we said in the last podcast, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, you're listening to other baseball stuff. When the deals are this large, the ownership group, whoever fronts that, they're making these negotiations. It's much less. I know baseball ops definitely participates, because why would you sign up to be president of baseball operations if you can't participate in negotiation? But basically, final approval gets done. And also, I think Boras had taken the Giants around the block a couple of times already. That. You know, maybe Bear was just like, this is not fun. I'm not going to be here for this. Like, he just has a short attention span And if there's no immediate, the longer it drags out, the less he wants to stay. I don't think he was barred. I just think he wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big part of it. All right. Who will be the better player over the course of their lifetime deals, Correa or Judge? And you can use whatever criteria you want for better.
All right. My criteria is I'm going to be a huge homer. So Correa. I can, you know, say that Keith Law likes Correa better because he does. He had Correa as his top guy of the offseason. Dan Szymborski has Correa as worth more over his contract than Judge. Judge, he has been better over the first, I think, 3 years. And then after that, in 2027, he finally or 2026, he finally has Correa being better. And then he's better for just the whole rest of the contract. You know, the Zips projections are obviously just projections. They don't mean anything necessarily, but the way the playing time hits Judge, and the when his power kind of starts to go and the injuries hit him, it looks like he's projected anyway to not have the kind of the legs that Correa will. I'm going to go with that because I want it to be true.
What we didn't really get too much into his offensive skill set, you know, but it, basically there's been criticism like he's not going to be a 25, 30 home run guy, Correa, but he's a great fit for Oracle Park. He's going to be, he is a gap to gap guy. That's already the profile. And so when you hear a power hitting gap to gap guy at Oracle Park, you're thinking doubles and triples. That's exciting. That's fantastic. And then defensively on the injury thing, I saw that he's actually really good. He's a great defender who doesn't dive a lot. So he actually he plays it in such a way he's able to minimize his injury risk, which obviously doesn't show up in the numbers right now because he doesn't play. He's had injury spots where he's missed it. But in term long term, his style of play will potentially minimize how much time he misses or injuries diminishing his performance. It could be theoretically a more gradual aging curve. So that's exciting. You kind of have to. I mean, look, it's a power hitting 6'7" outfielder guy who mashes versus an athletic middle infielder. And he's, you know, Correa's game is much more balanced. When he starts to lose a step, he'll still have the bat, you know, and yeah, I think over the life, It'll be good. Yeah, the first 2 years, I would say the next two seasons, though, it's not going to feel that way. When Aaron Judge like hits 100 home runs over the next two seasons. But it is important to remember that Judge is like that team. He's the whole lineup for them. And that's not entirely the case with Correa. What would be more interesting, which we're not going to do, is Correa versus the other shortstops. How those, like, who's going to have the better long term? Is he going to be better than Bogarts for the rest of the way? Trey Turner seems like they're almost neck and neck in terms of who will be as valuable, but harder to say, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to predict, I'd have Correa and Turner kind of in one tier, and then Bogarts and Swanson below them. But you never know.
Exactly. And okay, so then, this is something I wrote about, but will this deal, and this is something you talked about. So now I realize I just stole your idea, and I used it in an article. So thanks, Doug, but also sorry. will this deal improve, prevent, or do nothing in regards to the Giants' chances of signing Shohei Ohtani next season, next offseason?
I mean, yeah, it has to improve them because Ohtani's only going to go somewhere he thinks he can win. And so he wants to see the commitment to winning, and he wants to see good players on the team. And that's, you know, Carlos Correa is both of those things. I don't necessarily think it makes them the favorites. I think if the Dodgers want to jump in and give Ohtani 10 years and $500 million, which they might, then, you know, that's, the Giants aren't going to match that. But I think it puts them in the ballpark, baseball term, in a way that they would not have been otherwise.
I totally agree. I think that's important, is to know that, is to at least put yourself in position, because it's, you know, it's not luck that they got Correa entirely, but in some ways it is, right? Because they don't have all the other stuff that would make them attractive to free agents who are looking for a winner necessarily. You know, Correa is also banking on the Giants program that they have in place. You know, it's got to feel familiar to Houston, so he knows what it's capable of, right? But a lot of other players might have been looking, seemed like they were looking for more certainty. That would seem to hurt the Giants when it comes to Ohtani, right? He wants to walk into a situation where it already looks good. So, but at the same time, it's exactly what you said. Is this team trying? Are they in a better position to win? Ohtani might be receptive to, well, you know, since Zaidi has been able to implement his program, you've had 2021. Yes, 2022 was a dip, but then look where they bounced back to in 2023. I think the Giants were already in good shape heading into the season, you know, better. They were entering the season kind of in a better position how they ended last season. And let's just transition into that. The Giants made two starting pitching ads right before this Correa news. I wonder if they just, if there was an issue where they accidentally sent one contract to the other with the names switched, because it's the same deal. Ross Stripling, Sean Manaea signed in reverse order. Sean Manaea first and Ross Stripling, but both of them are getting $25 million over 2 years with an opt-out after year one. And then they were structured in such a way so that the real money that the Giants were paying is not going to be their cap figure.
So, I mean, we remember Ross Stripling because his first start in the majors, he took a no-hitter into the eighth inning, and then Trevor Brown homered, hit a two-run homer. And Dave Roberts took him out with a no-hitter still intact, and Trevor Brown hit a two-run homer that inning to tie the game. That was fun. But it was overall, fun. Overall, I mean, he's been mostly a good pitcher. His first few years were pretty consistent. The Dodgers never gave him that much playing time because they just had too many other good pitchers, basically. They traded him to Toronto when he was having a bad 2020, which, I don't know. Like, what happened in 2020, just throw it in the garbage. You know, none of that counts, really. He rebounded a little bit in 2021, but not fully. And then last year he had a good year with the Blue Jays. Did not throw that many innings. Has never thrown more than that, than 134 and a third innings in a season. But, you know, he's a good pitcher. You know, you see him, you very rarely watch him and be like, oh, he sucks. He's just, he's not like sexy or exciting, but he's a good like back the rotation option. And I certainly trust him more than Anthony DeSclafani.
You know who really wishes that what you said about 2020 was correct? Sam Coonrod. Anyway, yes, Ross Stripling is, I'm sure, or actually I was certain when I was reading through Ross Stripling's profile, cause I didn't watch the Blue Jays surprisingly this past year. So I didn't know what he did. But when I saw him on the list of free agents and just looked at him, I was like, oh man, if Farnsworth hasn't been dreaming about him, being a free agent, I'd be very surprised. And then you see Ross Stripling when he was interviewed after it was announced that he signed with them. He's like, Farhan contacted me right when the season ended. It was like, I bet it was 12:01 too. He was like,
yeah,
listen. Yeah. But he, profile wise, statistically, it's his repertoire is slightly different in terms of pitch mix. And then they'll probably tweak that, but he is basically not as hard throwing Jacob Junis. If I'm to give people an idea of what he's, it's like a sinker slider. He's got a changeup and a curveball, but his real thing is no walks and no home runs. So he is a master of basically deception and sequencing, I think, because even his spin rates are not incredibly sexy. So, you know, I think he's got a delivery that's got some deception to it as well. So there is that. And yes, I was very happy about Ross Stripling, by the way. If I had just gone to bed last night thinking, oh, they got Ross Stripling in the rotation, that's bad. That's not bad. It's all part of the same thing. It's like the Giants do have a process. That's what they were kind of smugly saying at the winter meetings. We're happy with our process, and wink, wink. And you kind of think, oh, that means they're kind of boring and they're going to find whatever guys.
Right. But, and when they don't sign Aaron Judge, you're like, what loser talk is that?
Yeah. But then also when you like, I was basically putting a pin in what the big move could be. I sensed there would be something. Because of missing out on Judge would intensify that. And if they missed out on Correa, it would intensify that they would do something. But in the meantime, I was like, well, what are they doing in the meantime still? And I like, one, that they were doing anything at all. And two, they were getting guys that you could be confident in and you could clearly see what the process is. I feel like the Giants have just, they've earned, if they haven't earned your admiration, listener, or even your respect, What's halfway between respect and benefit of the doubt? It should be that. Is it just benefit of the doubt? You should probably just give them the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
Also, if they haven't earned your respect or admiration, I admire you for listening to this Giants podcast. Way to really branch out there.
And I don't even feel like it's drinking the Kool-Aid. It's more, I was skeptical. And then, you know, seeing what their model is over time and, you know, being in the wastelands of not having to write on McCovey Chronicles every day certainly made it easier to kind of look at things from a distant perspective. And then you kind of just back it up and you see, okay, they're being very consistent in what they look for. And the guys that they get who fit that mold generally, or not even generally, more often than not, perform how they would want them to. You know, basically looking at relievers going like, start with a guy who's like John Brebbia and work backwards. And then suddenly all their reliever pickups make more sense. You know, that kind of thing. You look at what Stripling does well. This is now I'm kicking to you. You look at Stripling and it matches all the things they look for starting pitchers. His innings thing you brought up, that's an interesting point, but I think that's why they're collecting these guys right now. You know, Alex Cobb and Alex Wood are not guys you want to be counting on to give you 150 or 160 innings in a season. Not at all. As good as they could be.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. If you get four guys who you think each give you like 100 innings, then, you know, you're like, yeah, then we can piece together two rotation spots out of that.
Yeah. And then Kyle and Harrison then,
and maybe,
looming.
And maybe Kyle Harrison will show up or someone else will... Who is it? The right-hander who I've seen a number of times, so I already...
Tristan Beck?
Do not remember. Tristan Beck. Yeah, I was about to say, traded for Mark Melanson. Someone give me the name. Yeah, Tristan Beck, who had a really nice end of the season in Sacramento. So you can then call them up, use them as sort of your backups if you need them. If the 100 innings that Wood and Cobb and Stripling and Manaea all pitch happen to be at the same time, so when they're all out, you can then call up Tristan Beck and Sean Jelly and kind of fill in the rotation till they're back. But yeah, I mean, they're trying to have a plan because they were thin at starting pitching last year. And you saw the issues that caused, not just in the rotation, but having all those bullpen days, it really exposed the bullpen in a way that I think they would have been a lot more effective if they had not had to pit to take on so many innings, because the team just didn't have any starters.
Yep. So then that just brings me to put it on you, because even if I study the Giants process and see the results and all and their acquisition model, the Sean Manaea deal makes a little less sense to me in that regard. Does it make more sense to you?
I think Manaea even makes maybe probably just as much sense, because the downside of Stripling is worse than the downside of Manaea. It's just Stripling was better last year, but, you know, Stripling in even 2021 was pretty rough with a 5.21 FIP. Last year, for all of Manaea's struggles in San Diego, he still had a 4.53 FIP. So you look at sort of the advanced stats, and even his worst year is better in that way than Stripling's worst year. Also, they probably, if I were to guess, they have some fix they want to make to him. I don't know that Zaidi knows him from Oakland. They weren't major league they weren't in the majors there at the same time.
He would have been in the minor league system, I think, though, when Zaidi was there.
I don't know. It doesn't look like it. He was traded. Okay. He was traded in 2015 by the Royals.
Got it.
But probably someone who Zaidi kind of followed from afar, liked. Maybe he, you know, he would kind of chat up David Forst from time to time, be like, "Hey, man, that Sean Manaea kid, pretty good." And Forst's like, "Yeah, we like his makeup." And Zaidi's like, "Aha, I got information out of you." Because that's how I assume he is in all human interactions. And so, you know, they probably see something there that they like, that they think they can improve on, that the Padres didn't do last year, something he was doing a little bit more in Oakland. And, you know, they are probably hoping for more innings out of him. He is someone who's been a little bit more reliable in terms of innings other than 2019 when he was hurt for almost the whole year. But otherwise, it's been a solid 150 every year, at least.
And he does the thing that they also kind of like. He just gives them a different look to throw out in a, you know, in a three game series. It's going to be, you're going to have a sinker guy, you're going to have a power guy, you're going to have a soft tossing lefty guy. So just the jumble itself could be part of that as well. But good
and
point.
Physically
so
a different look. His hair is pretty cool.
Wild hair. Yes. Also, wild apparently a great teammate too. Very nice guy and a good teammate as well. So, you know, clubhouse culture, it's an intangible. Do you pay for that? It's kind of irrelevant. It's like you pay to get the guy that you want. And part of why you want him is this intangible quality. So, you know, it's more that than anything else. Let's just spend a minute talking about Carlos Rodon. Somehow they haven't signed him while we've been recording this. I can't believe it. Carlos Rodon, do you think the Giants are still in on him? And does adding him complete a perfect offseason? Or do you feel like they're in pretty good shape already?
I don't think they're looking to sign him. I think they could. My kind of idea earlier in the offseason was to trade Alex Cobb. And so Rodon could then, if they could do that, then they could put Rodon in his spot in the rotation. But I don't think they are. I think they've made their long-term commitment for the offseason. The Giants, I think they've shown themselves to be very, very risk-averse when it comes to pitching. And that comes from, that was the case in for Zaidi's years in LA too. So Rodon wants a 7-year deal, even if he has to settle for 6, that's going to be too much for the Giants. And I think there's a good argument that that will be too much considering his injury history. He's had 2 good years, but otherwise it's been tough for him to find the field consistently.
And even if you were to take out his specific injury risk or injury history, it's a pitcher. It's a starting pitcher. And I love Carlos Rodon as a starting pitcher, and I wish the Giants signed him. But, you know, at the same time, him asking for more than 5 years, I think even more than 4 years, because what's wrong with 4 years and $120 million? You know what I mean? But at the same time, if he can get $150 million for 5, why not? Good for him. But I don't know. I accidentally scrolled at the bottom of his baseball reference page, and who knows? We never talk about similarity scores anymore, and that's fine. But I did. It was interesting to see it because on that list were a bunch of injury red flag guys, and I'll lead off with James Paxton. That was on there. And Noah Lowry. Those are two. And then Blake Snell. So... Noah Lowry, not a hard throwing left-hander, but just,
I mean, there's some other good ones on there. Josh Johnson, Noah Syndergaard, Rich Harden. Yeah.
And what do you think about when you think about those players, their injury histories?
Yeah. Like once really good pitchers who then got injured and then were never the same.
Basically around the time they turned 30, it's just impossible for them to play baseball anymore. And who knows, right? It's always like, who knows? There's always an exception and all that stuff. But yes, the Giants being risk averse in his case, I don't really take an issue with. It'd just be nice to have him. But yeah, it looks less and less. But it would be interesting what the final deal is if it winds up being something where you could, if they hadn't got Correa, would the Giants have maybe done it? But that's all stuff we don't have to deal with because the Giants signed Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
Deal. So I don't think they're done for this offseason. If you're a fan wondering what moves they'll do next, we didn't even really talk about Mitch Haniger again. Sorry. You know, I really want Mitch Haniger to just have a freaking great year this year because we're all kind of forgetting him. He's suddenly being Jan Brady'd or Meg from Family Guide, where it's just, no, he's being Josh from 30 Rock. That's what's happening right now.
Mitch, he is, come on the podcast and insult us for not talking about you challenge.
Yes. And but he has his own series of risks and injuries. But, you know, it's also not that difficult to imagine. They get 130 games out of him and he's like got a 130 weighted runs created plus or something. Right. It's not not even a ridiculous thing to imagine. And it would help the Giants incredibly. So but also, you know, Zaidi works best when he gets to play in the filth. And, you know, you're going to have some desperate guys in the towards the end of January. And the Giants still have moves. They need a left-handed bat. I don't know if anyone's paying attention. So that everyone they're getting is right-handed. So we'll see. Is Brandon Belt coming back? I don't know. We'll find out, I guess, soon enough. So I guess, and we're going to take some time until there's the next big signing. If they bring back Rodon, if they trade for Mike Trout or something, I guess we'll be back. Check in. Otherwise, expect us next month, and then one more month after that. We'll do monthly until the season starts. So until then, thanks for listening, and go Giants.
Go Giants. Thank you, Carlos Correa, for making our lives better. All right. Yep. Yeah, you too.